All right. Hey, I can project my voice. I don't have to now, so that's even better. All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the 9 group policy principles that all IT administrators should know. Okay, my name is Alan Birchall, as I just said. I work for Avanade in Australia. I'm from Brisbane, so flew in for the conference. Thanks for having me. I'm the author, owner, chief, doodad, whatever you want to call, it's all me at grouppolicy.biz. Grouppolicy.biz is my website that basically is just a collection of news, tips, tutorials, everything about group policy and relating to group policy. I've been maintaining that website now for over 6 years. Okay, so it has quite a substantial backlog of policies and settings. I'm also a group policy MVP. No surprise there. So I am just a group policy geek. So basically what this session is today about is group policy has changed over the years. And what I'm just going to go through is just some of the principles that, quite honestly, some of us group policy MVPs have discussed and talked about over the years, and we kind of come to a mutual understanding. It's like, these things are really good, these things are really bad. And so we've just come up with basically 9 arbitrary principles. So first of all, is this session for you? I always like to make sure that the target, it does say it's for IT administrators and it does say it's about group policy. So if you have no interest in group policy and you're not an IT administrator, maybe not for you, but that's okay. But maybe you are an IT administrator and you do use group policy in your organization. But you're really just starting out and you're really like, what's all this group policy? Am I doing it right? Am I doing it wrong? Not sure. All right, I'm going to set a lot of the fundamental principles that I'm going to set is hopefully here going to be able to set you on a course so you're not going to go down too many paths that are going to lead you into trouble and pain and hurt and suffering and leads to anger and dark side of the... No, hang on, mate. That's group policy too. But basically, hopefully, it's going to prevent you from really making too many mistakes along the way. If you can follow these guidelines and these principles in this session, then it's probably going to mean that your environment, if you're setting it up fresh or you just, it's probably going to be pretty good. If you're intermediate, if you've been just managing your group policy over time, just letting it tick over. You inherited it from someone, you looked at it, you kind of understand how it all works. You think it's okay, you're not sure if it's okay, your group policy set up in your organization, it's just the way you've done it all the time. So that kind of intermediate. This session's for you. Hopefully what this will do is give you some ideas of some improvements that you never even thought about. Or maybe, you could think, oh, hey, what I'm doing there is okay. If you're an expert, yes. If you know everything about group policy, fantastic, love to meet you. I don't know everything about group policy, but expert level, if you are a group policy guru, if you have lived and breathed group policy over the years and you know how to set it up and it's all working great, yes, this session's for you. Hopefully what this will do is validate to you what you've been doing is right, which, sometimes just some extra validation, peer checking, oh, yeah, I do that. That's pretty obvious, But for some other people, it might not be so obvious. But I think just some extra validation of what you're doing in your organization is the right thing is just sometimes nice to have, right? You just want to justify to your boss why they paid all this money to be here. Absolutely. All right? I am not selling you anything. All right? So you can go back to your organization when you go back to work on Friday afternoon, if you're unfortunate, or Monday morning, and you can say to your boss, hey boss, I learned all this stuff about group policy, we should be doing this and this and this and this instead because, it'll make our much more efficient environment. It just means that your boss, or whoever paid for the bill, can get some immediate benefit out of what here at Ignite. You're not going to go back to your boss and say, hey, I saw this great new Microsoft product, it's going to cost you a lot of money, but it's going to make us more productive and it'll be completely good. And then the boss goes, oh, did I just pay money so we can pay more money to Microsoft? And paying money to Microsoft is really good. It really is. But sometimes you just want that immediate benefit. So I'm hoping what you're going to get out of this is just some golden nuggets. Some of these things might be really obvious and easy. Others might be like, wow, my head's just exploded. I never thought of doing it that way in an organization. All right. So what I'm saying is that some of it might be for you. All of it might be for you. None of it might be for you, but it just kind of validates what you're doing. If you're a software developer, no, this is not for you. I am not coding in this session. There is no code. There is PowerShell, but I will give you all the scripts. All right, they're in the slide decks. They'll be in the video. I'll give you links to URLs and everything like that. All right, and I'm not typing it, so we'll just, you know, copy paste. You know, oh, I do sound like a software developer. Ooh, anyway. All right, but first of all, full credit where credit's due. Darren Maelia, who is a group policy MVP, he owns a software called SDM Software. They can do some great group policy tools, group policy attestation, group policy migrating tools, just lots of some paid, some free tools on his website. He blogged recently about these 9 principles, and I basically got his permission to say, hey, they're the great 9 principles. Can I do a tech ed talk about it? And he's like, go for it. So I will. And so this is the session. So, but first of all, at GPO guy on Twitter, so if you want to tweet him out saying, hey, I'm seeing at Alan Birchall at the moment talking about at GPO's 9 group policy principles, that'd be really cool. I've taken his list, I've modified it a little bit, I've reordered it, I've added a few, I've consolidated a few. It's not exactly the same, but you kind of get the gist. So first of all, the principles. We have to take a look back to understand why these principles are so important at the moment. Group policy came out with Windows 2000. Yay, Windows 2000. We love Windows 2000. Does anyone have Windows 2000 in their organization anymore? Ooh, I might see a couple of hands. Oh dear. Well, it's okay. You've got group policy. You can configure it. But anyway, group policy administrators, it was like server administrators all of a sudden had this ability now to completely control the configuration of their Windows computers. And what did they do? They went, all the group policy settings can be configured. And so they did. And so they went through every single setting. Internet Explorer alone had like 1,500 settings at the time. I think now it's 1,800 or whatever. And you'd go through and you enable and disable every single option because you could and it was great and you had complete control and the users don't know anything and you had to just tell them how their UI is going to look. You had to tell them they couldn't run command prompt, right? It was great. Really complex and broke everything, but it was great. Okay. So maybe this is kind of ringing some bells back in the early days of group policy, all right? You wanted to configure everything because you could, and because users, all they had at home were just, you know, they just got what they got given, you know? They didn't like it too bad. They couldn't bring their own device, could they? So today is a bit different. Bring your own device, of course. Users have brought their own device into organizations. Now, they're probably not going to be domain joined, all right? Highly unlikely, actually, bring your own device are going to be domain joined. But users are used to having the machine the way they want it, right? They have personal devices. They certainly have personal devices at home. A lot of your users will probably have Windows 10, Windows 7, whatever operating system, similar operating system at home as they do in the office. And the idea is really, well, I have the ability to run a command prompt at home, why can't I do it at work? Yeah. Or, you know, I'm allowed to open up Control Panel at home, why can't I do it at work? If the users are running as standard user, really the damage they can do is not that great, even if you give them all the UI options. Because at the end of the day, it's the administrative permission that lets them do damage to their machine, not the fact that the button's there ready to be pressed. Okay, it's kind of like, I was listening to Chris Jackson's talk about how, you know, in Windows XP, you couldn't change the time zone because you're not an administrator. Well, they kind of changed that, and they made it a little bit better in Vista time, so you could change the time zone, you just couldn't change the time as administrator. Basically, what I'm trying to say is users have a lot more flexibility now with their environment. They can configure it, you know. Most organizations don't mandate that your desk has to be presented in exactly the same, your physical desk has to be in exactly the same way. People are allowed to customize their desks, so why can't they be allowed to customize their desktop in their computer? Give them some freedom. Make that enclosed box that you like to keep users in just a little bit bigger so that when they move their arms around, they don't hit anything, right? And then they don't complain, and happy users means happy administrators, right? All right, so that's kind of like, so one simply does not apply group policy settings to users anymore. It's a complete change in mentality of group policy administrators. All right, apply as few of settings as possible to your users. Windows, out of the box, is configured in a way that allows users to do what they need to do. You know, Microsoft have spent a lot of time tweaking those default settings, right, to make sure that the users are as happy as possible. They've probably done a million user hours of case studies tests to make sure that, you know, this one button is ticked or not, all right? Yeah, there's going to be some things you might want to change along the way, but only change the things, basically, that you need to change. So breaking with the past, I was talking about all these policy settings. And policy settings have been around for a while, since 2000, and you had 16 years of these rubber bands being laid on top of each other of configuration settings in your organization. So what you need to do, unfortunately, this is the hard part. Now, if you've done an XP to Windows 7 migration, you might have done this. But if you haven't, or you know, you kludged it along and you just kind of just threw the users in there and hope the policies work, you probably still have this massive ball of settings that you need to break apart. And really the only way you can do that is to cut that rubber band ball down to its real core. And how do you do that? Creating new OU structure is usually the best approach to do that. You create a parallel OU structure and you migrate the computers and users into that new OU structure. Normally you time that with some sort of upgrade, because you're already disrupting the users. And then if you have a major change in policy settings on computers, your mileage may vary and it could adversely affect it. But then what do you start as your baseline? Where do you start? What settings do I apply? Do I apply nothing? Right? So I always go apply the security settings. Screensaver timeout, group policy, absolutely. That's a great one to apply. You can go to that URL there for the security guides. They release security guide templates for all the Microsoft products. The security guide templates that are released by Microsoft are basically three-letter acronym companies all come together and say, well, we think this security setting, and they think that security setting, and then Microsoft tests those security settings. So it's a well-known, well-tested set of baseline security settings. You can also use the Microsoft Security Compliance Manager tool. So the Microsoft Security Compliance Manager tool looks like this. Not the car, that's mine, no. Okay, like this. Okay, so basically, you download this from microsoft.com/scm, really hard URL to remember, it was up on the screen just before, I'll go back to it in a sec. But you download this basically from microsoft.com.scm. What this does is has all the baseline templates for your operating systems. The Windows 10 16.07 one's not out yet, but it should be out by the end of the month. Basically, it gives you all the recommended settings. So over time, so you might actually find some of these settings update. Domain security. Did you know the account lockout threshold for your entire domain now, the recommended value is actually 10 logons? It used to be 50, which was a lot, but now it's 10. But these are your Microsoft, and that's not the default, right? Default settings in these templates, you're probably used to having 3 or 5 or something like that because you've inherited a group policy object from long ago. Okay, so there's also user. And so there's a lot of settings here to be seen, but if you actually have a look here, the actual recommended guidance here is a lot of these settings that they're saying don't configure them. They're there, it's an explanation, but don't configure them. Yes, the screensaver's there, that's really good. Notify when antivirus program opens attachments. So there's some, you know, user settings there, but these are basically your core security settings, you know, block toast notifications on the lock screen so you don't get information leakage. It would be terrible if someone tweeted at you while you were doing a presentation. No. But, you know, if you're under a lock screen or something like that, you don't want pop-up notifications to happen because you could have confidential information. Basically, what I'm saying is start with the security settings. Security settings are where you begin, and then only configure it as required. Now, obviously, drive mappings, printer mappings are the things you probably do want to add. as group policy preferences. But don't go mad trying to configure all the settings. You don't have to anymore. It's widely accepted now, even in the group policy community. Just leave it alone, simpler the better. So the tool SCM, it's great. You can export policy settings, you can download them, you can actually back them up. That's the URL. Take a screenshot. 3, 2, 1. Okay, next one. This is one specific setting, which is evil. Okay, always wait for network. Sounds like a great idea because my machine has to be configured perfectly the first time it boots up, and I want the users to wait all the time. It's great. No, it's really not. Group policy doesn't just apply when the machine starts. Group policy applies in the background on your machines all the time. All right, avoid this. This is basically enforcing Windows 2000 behavior on how the computer starts up. It says, I need to get all my group policies the first whenever I turn on. All right, I can't just turn on and then get my group policies asynchronously in the background after that. So how do you find it? Because you might have this around. The slide decks are available for download. If your phone could capture this PowerShell, it had good resolution. But this PowerShell script will be downloadable. Okay, so how do I find in my organization where I have that? Because you know what? I reckon there's a good chance it's probably configured on a lot of your group policies, especially the ones that you are just hiding, maybe on your servers, maybe on your workstations or something like that. Oh, look, I've got an Ignite network. That's cool. Okay, so what this script does is basically get password. No, I don't want that one. Open, find GPS settings. The great thing about this script, and this is just a little bit of an adaptation of a script that I found, is if you replace the key here and the value name here and the key, you can find any administrative template setting that's configured in your organization. So if you want to scan all your group policies for that one setting that's configured somewhere, this script will do it. So basically, I've just run this script. It's literally just gone through all my group policy objects. I have 100. And found the ones just that have that setting. And then it just outputs the name. GPS called wait for network. Well, so what sort of effect does this wait for network group policy object have? So just to prove that that group policy object there does have that setting applied. I have a slow group policy. The OU is called slow because I like to have my machines that are slow. And as you can see here, yes, actually, wait for network is enabled. Yay, it found it. So I have two machines. I have Windows 7 and I have Windows 7A. And if I have a look under here, Windows 7A is slow and Windows 7 is in fast. I'm going to start the Windows 7 and Windows 7A machines at the same time. Which one do you think is going to start first? All right. So alphabetically, normally, it actually, when I do this, the 7A actually powers on first. But I'm going to start them. Ready? 3, 2, 1. So both machines are connecting. 7A has the policy applied, wait for network. 7 doesn't. All right. I've slowed the network down a little bit. I've applied about 10 group policy objects. Your mileage may vary. Notice the one on the right is applying computer settings. The one on the left is already at control alt delete. All right, that was from a cold boot. There it is. Okay, this was on a fast network, on a fast server with SSD drives. If you're on a slow network with lots of group policy objects, that's compounded so much more. I did a demo a few years ago about that with group policy and showing how the demo with a simulated slow WAN link. And basically, yeah, the more GPOs, the slower the WAN link, the slower that boot up process is. Avoid that network, avoid that setting. Why do you need to, why do I even have that setting? It's just a legacy setting. They changed the behavior from Windows XP. So they gave you a policy to turn it back on. There's no reason to leave it on. Just let your policies update synchronously in the background. All right, so more performance. Basically, how to get more performance out of your organization. What do you mean taking 5 minutes isn't normal to boot up? All right, I've seen computers take 5 minutes to boot up, users go off, have coffee and all that, and it's completely accepted as norm. That's not normal. Certainly not with Windows 7, especially not with Windows 8 and Windows 10. All right, and there's a lot of things you can do that would slow that down. So one of the things is that when that was doing a wait for network, it's actually doing what they call a synchronous policy update. It's synchronously updating the policy. It's waiting for the compute policies to update before it starts. Excuse me. But there's a couple of reasons. Of course, always wait for network will trigger that. But there are also some group policy changes, group policy settings that if they change, if the group policy object changes, will trigger one of these synchronous group policy settings. I've covered this before in previous sessions and other years, but if you're doing software installation, folder redirection, drive mappings, or disk quota, and you change one of those group policy objects, even if it has nothing to do with those settings, it triggers one of those slow networks. So even slow network boots. So even if you have that option turned off, it's still going to trigger a slow network boot. Okay? You can also do a GP update slash sync too if you want to force the matter. All right? And also, don't use log on scripts. All right? Group policy preferences have been around since 2006. 10 years. They're amazing. Actually, 2007, okay, 9 years. They're still amazing. You use group policy preferences, you drive mappings, registry keys, favorites, homepage settings. The list goes on. Have a look at them. I've not come across a scenario yet where I've had to have a full-on log-on script anymore because of group policy preferences. Well, the good news is they fixed that, though. Who here is still Windows 7, though? Yeah, a lot of hands. So this still applies, but they have fixed this. In Windows 8, who's here Windows 8? Oh, wow, a couple of hands. More than Windows 8. Lots of hands, excellent. So in that, congratulations, you've just got this for free. All right, delayed logon scripts. Logon scripts don't run synchronously anymore when you boot the computer in Windows 8 or later. It like happens 5 minutes later after the user logs on. All right, also they do group policy caching, which means the synchronous policy update doesn't happen anymore because the operating system itself has cached the setting. All right, by design, design your group policy settings by function and type as delegations require. So here's some guidelines. I have a big circle here and within little circles. So what do I mean by 80% of resource? I reckon 80% of your settings can be applied to a single resource. And a resource is a workstation, a server, or a user. And I don't know too many other resources than that. Workstations are server or computer objects, obviously, and users are users. All right, the vast majority of your settings should be applied in one policy to all those settings. And then you start applying organizational settings and then locational settings if needed. But try not to vary the design of your SOE much. Drive mappings are one of those ones, which is kind of like, yeah, that's the one that's always a bit different. But drive mappings you can support in group policy preferences. You can do item level targeting, all right, which means you get really fine grain applying of settings. So apply settings close to the target. Apply based mostly on the most to least significant. So if for some reason in your organization you have a bunch of workstations in organization, sub-organization A, and a bunch of workstations, sub-organization B, and the settings are completely different, although I don't know why, because you're probably applying the same security template. But if they are, then that maybe is a reason, right? Because it's a big change. You don't want to have all the differences. So where you have exceptions to the rule, you want to keep the exceptions as small as possible. Avoid applying one setting per policy at all costs. Remember, the more group policy objects you apply to your machine, the more network traffic there is to download those group policy settings. Even the group policy caching, it has to download those. So you just, you know, overhead, network. There's things that make, you know, more group policies a lot more palatable, like having a policy definitions folder and having DFSR replication on your sysfol and all those things, but generally it's still not good. Don't use loopback. The only time you should use loopback on group policy settings is when you have a Citrix terminal, remote desktop services, whatever you want to call it, server. That is the only time I've ever had a need to use loopback settings. You should be able to design your environment to not use loopback settings otherwise. all right, with your OU structure. You should be able to have your OU structure map out to your requirements. Loopback settings are just evil and they're so hard to troubleshoot. Same with block inheritance. Block inheritance on group policy and OU structure is just like, I give up, it's too hard, I'm just gonna block inheritance. That is just the wrong way to do it, right? Maybe if you have like a test OU structure, you might have block inheritance under there, maybe. That's usually the only time I actually ever seen block inheritance. Loopback merge, why would you want loopback merge? Just, hey, politics, yeah, well, if I could get you through the politics, if I could answer all the political questions in your organization, yeah, I'm sorry, I'm not a miracle worker, but yeah. But loopbacks really are just, they're hard, they're difficult to understand, they're difficult to troubleshoot, they're not normal, because you're applying user settings based on a computer, and for Citrix that makes a lot of sense, because you want different settings applied on Citrix servers than you do on their normal desktop, right? But for anything else, it's just, you should be able to have an OU structure that supports the way you want to provision your settings. Downside of blocking inheritance, as the question is, basically, you're putting a lot of exceptions to the rules in your group policy settings. Group policies want to inherit, and then you block the inheritance. And so then you have to redo all your linking and all your group policy settings again at that point. So you've just doubled up all those settings. And then you have a whole, you're basically starting again. It's like having this orphaned off area in your OU structure. Inheritance is good if it's some situations like test labs and stuff like that, but if it makes it hard to administer, you want your life to be easy with group policy. You want troubleshooting to be as simple as possible, and if you can avoid inheritance, that's really the best way. It just keep that OU structure simple, clean, all nicely inherited down. Okay, so using filtering, security groups, WMI, group policy preference, item level targeting, like I said, these exceptions to the rules should be kept, on a very small exception basis. Don't create a completely new group policy object just because it has two settings different, all right? You notice here on this, if I could point to something, yeah, there we go. Notice here, we've got manufacturing, so we've got a people, we've got a Sydney location and a Coolangatta location. Maybe there's only four settings I want to apply to manufacturing. I can just apply the policy here and apply a security group that way. So some ways are good. Linked unfiltered GPO should be the 95% rule. You should just be able to link a GPO to an OU and that should be it. All right. Security filtering for users, yeah, that's pretty good. Okay. Obviously, if the user, you just add them to the group, you have to say, oh, you have to log off and log back on again, please, because you know you need to be added to the group. You could ask them to wait 8 hours. That's really good at 9 a.m. in the morning, because then they don't have to do anything till the next day. WMI OS query, so filtering group policy objects based on operating system. Yeah, pretty good. But remember, the new group policy settings that are released with new operating systems don't actually apply to your old operating system, so you probably don't need to filter them. Okay, and item level targeting and group policy preferences is really good. It's a very fine, granular way of, especially security groups, especially users, computer names, things like that within group policy preferences. Quite good. Some very bad ways. WMI LDAP queries are really expensive time-wise. WMI LDAP queries, your workstation has to go out to the network and do an LDAP query and then come back, and that takes time because you've got a network. And if it's slow and on a VPN, that's going to take a lot of time. Avoid queries that do lots of complicated local queries. Don't do a query that says, you know, apply this only if it has these 7 applications installed on the machine, because then the WMI has to query what applications are installed on the local hard drive, and then if your WMI is not performing well, it's taking forever just to figure out what apps are installed. Don't ever use AD site group policy objects. Bad. They are terrible. And if one of those settings had something, every time a laptop is plugged into that network, it has to get all these new group policy settings applied to it. If you're Windows 7, there's your synchronous policies, applying to your machine, making them slower. They're so hard to understand. And security group filtering on computers is really slow to react. So if for some reason you're applying a security group, a computer-based setting to a computer, and you add the computer to the group, you now have to wait 8 hours for that setting to apply. Actually, 10 hours because it's 8 hours for the group membership and it's 2 hours for the group policy refresh. All right, if you're lucky, because your Kerberos token doesn't refresh until for every 8 hours. Right? I'm sure the users would love it to say, sorry, I have to reboot the server, just applying a new group policy to it. It's like, no, they're not going to like that. All right. Avoid copying and pasting group policy objects. Look, it saves a lot of time. You can copy and paste group policy objects using group policy management console. One of the things I'll show you, though, is if you've got a group policy object and it has it has some group policy preferences in it, and that's not group policy management console. Okay, you can actually selectively copy just single group policy preferences. I think I have, is it shortcuts? No, I think it's drive mappings. Yep. So I've got an M drive mapping there. Right. I don't want to go in and basically you can back up. You can copy from here. You can actually copy a group policy object. You can paste, you know. You can do that if you want to duplicate. Again, why are you duplicating settings? You want to keep your settings as unique as possible. You only want to apply that setting one or as few times as possible. All right. And the reason for that is you just want, if something has changed and you need to update that setting in the future, you don't want that setting to be updated 5 or 6 times in your organization. But if you have group policy preferences, these are really cool. Oh, here's one I made earlier. You can actually just copy the individual preferences and you can paste them to your desktop. Yes, there's already one there. As an XML file, or you can just even copy and paste within the group policy itself. So you can actually copy and paste individual settings. So if for some reason you are setting up a new site group policy object, so a group policy object applied to an OU, not an Active Directory site, but if you're setting up a site group policy object that's applied to an OU, this is kind of a good way to copy those drive mappings and printer mappings that you probably don't want to have to type a million times because then you'll fat finger something and something won't work. But group policy preferences are a nice way. SDM software also has a tool called the Group Policy Migration Tool, which actually allows you to merge group policies. So you can migrate settings from Group Policy A into Group Policy B. I thought I'd give SDM software because, you know, they're the ones who, Darren's the one who thought about these 9 principles, so that's his plug. But yeah, they've also got a tool. So what does it look like? Basically, we've got here, redundant settings, people, Sydney, manufacturing, people, Coolangatta manufacturing. These are the 4 same settings here. Well, if I ever need to update something here, I probably have to also duplicate it there. So what it should look like, we'll just link the same group policy object twice to the manufacturing OU. Okay, keep your manufacturing settings common. So then if something in manufacturing changes, you just change it once. Who wants to change it twice? Nobody, when you can do it once. Limiting the fingers in the pie. So if you're a large corporation, this would apply to you. If you're a very small organization, this probably won't apply to you. But basically, who here has a server team and a workstation team? Lots of hands. Who here has teams that basically are delegated to do specific things in IT? Yeah. All right. So this kind of applies to you. So you want your group policies to be nice. You want Team A to know what all their group policy settings are. You don't want Team B editing their group policy settings. You don't want Team A editing their group policy settings. Because what happens when everyone starts editing everyone else's group policy settings? It looks a lot more like this. It just turns into a big mess, right? You don't want that, okay? So how do you delegate permissions to specific teams? So over here, we have good corp. Corp bad? No, I want corp good. So good corp. And we have a SQL server. So notice here, you know, servers, that's the resource. And here's a type of server. So I want to delegate the SQL administrators access to be able to modify the SQL group policy objects. Because the SQL administrator team, SQL administrators, I will give them due credit. The SQL administrators usually know their stuff. All right? And if they break their servers, well, you know, sucks to be them. You broke it. It's their servers to fix. So give them the access to modify group policy objects. I think I've seen this group policy applied to SQL servers before. It basically means a process can allocate more RAM. Okay? SQL Server loves RAM. Anyhow, so go to the delegation. Look over there. And see, they don't have any delegation. So how do I delegate permissions to this group policy objects for the SQL admin team? And why do I want to just delegate it? Because I don't want to just give the SQL admins domain admins. Right? Because then they can edit everything. And then if they break your domain controller, it's your problem to fix. Right? So I'm going to give the SQL admins edit. I can even give them edit. I can give them delete. Or modify security settings. So if they want to delegate that group policy object to someone else, they can. I'm just going to select that. All right, so basically what I've done here is I've gone to the delegation tab of the SQL group policy object, and I've given the SQL admins access to edit this group policy object. They can't link it anywhere, right? They can just edit this group policy object. So what does that kind of look like? So if I log on as John, and John is a member of the SQL admin team, hey, that's John. So John is a member of the group, which is a member of the SQL admin team. He can go in, he can open up Group Policy Management Console. Yeah, man, the local server administrator tool too. He can go to that group policy object that we just delegated. That's not where it is. That's where it is. All right. He can edit that group policy object. Not a problem. He can go in, he can, you know, change these settings. You know, okay, I've opened it, I've hit right click and then got edit. If I didn't have edit access, can't edit it because all I have access to is the SQL. All right, I've got the settings there. Oh, that's a good error. So he can edit these settings if they want. The point of this is that let the workstation team modify the group policies for the workstations and users on the workstations. Let the server team modify the group policy settings for the servers. Don't keep them separated, because your administrative accounts shouldn't have really group policy settings applied to them. You should be just logging onto servers, if you are logging onto servers. You know, and your workstation's group policies should be separate. Right, you shouldn't have your mortal users logging onto the servers, and your mortal users, as in your normal everyday accounts, should certainly not have admin access to any of those servers. All right, so you really need to keep those policy settings separate. So that's what I mean about keeping the fingers in the pie, making sure you know that you stay on your side of the fence and we'll stay on our side of the fence, and then delegate the permissions to other teams as required. And obviously, you know, delegating just the required amount of access is important. All right, and that's how you can do delegation. Always back up your GPOs, because disasters always happen. Who here backs up their GPOs? Oh, good. Who here backs up their GPOs because they back up their AD? And that's what they think they're, right? By backing up your Active Directory, yes, you are technically backing up your group policy objects, but it's a pain in the butt to restore a group policy object from a full AD. Full AD system state. You want to be able to quickly restore configuration changes. Now, you could use something like Advanced Group Policy Management Console, which is part of the MDOT package, which allows you to do check-in, check-out processes, change control, version history, and everything like that. That's a great tool to have, but I would still be backing up your group policy objects, because you never know when that one setting was changed at somewhere in the middle of the night because someone was like told to fix something, they changed it, and it broke everything, and then it's like, what was the setting previously? I don't know, I can't remember. All right, so how do you back up your group policy objects? You can use the GUI, and you can use PowerShell. So, and this, like I said, this is really easy, but there are organizations that just go, never done that. I didn't even know. You go to Group Policy Management Console, right-click, and it's called Backup All. I was trying to zoom in on that. Backup All, really great setting. So we're going to back up all our group policy objects. You can browse. Where do I want to back it up to? I want to back it up to the C drive. You could back it up X. Oh, I'm on the wrong server. Sorry. Here we go. Group policy objects, backup all. No, I want to do it to GPO backups by GUI. So this is pretty straightforward. It's just done. If you've never done a group policy backup in your organization and you don't know if there is one, there might be one, do this as soon as you get back to the office. You now have a baseline of every group policy object from now on. Question?
How often should one do that?
As often as you need to. But backing up, that was a good question, backing up all the group policy objects all the time could take a lot of space. So if only, thank you for the question, if only there was a way to just back up, say, I don't know, the group policies that were modified in the last month. So over here, there is a script. Backup monthly. Oh, yeah, just, you all got that, haven't you? All right, so that's a script that will allow you to back up all the group policy objects that have changed in the last month. But hang on, you did kind of jump the gun there. But let me just show you how simple that command that we just did in the GUI can be. This is the same group policy backup that I just did from the GUI in one line, okay? I'm already going to do a CLS, aren't I? So I just did a backup, one line. It's just gone off, and it's now backing up all my group policy objects. So this is something you could script. It's PowerShell. There's the line, one line. Get all the GPO objects and back them up. Piece of cake. Okay, so you could script this. All right, very simple, kludgy. But I like the concept of having too many backups and not enough. Not enough is bad, too many is good. You can never have too many backups. So once we've done this, using this script, it's going through. That one's done as well, 102 group policy objects. All right, I can go in now very easily, right-click on any of my group policy objects, click on Restore from Backup, point it to the folder, bang, and it just found the last two backups, all right? It found the one that I just did there manually via the GUI, and it did the one by PowerShell, and it just knows, and it matches it. I didn't even go searching for it. I just threw it at the folder, and it went, yep, okay, found it, no problem. If I create a new group policy object, so new GPO 5, I just can't remember what number I'm up to. Oh, there you go. And I go restore from backup, and I point it to the same folder. Yeah, it's not there, because there's no backup of it, right? So, but what I can do is, if I can reanimate it, I can do an import from settings. Same folder. Now it's listing me. Well, I don't really know what group policy object that is, but here are all the group policy objects that I know about in that folder. All right, and I can import those settings. So if I want to reanimate just a couple of individual settings, I don't have to blat the entire group policy object. I can just create a new one and import the settings from backup and then have a look at what it was previous. And now to answer your question, what if I wanted to actually just back up all the ones in the last month? I'm going to have the URL of this script up in just a sec, so don't freak out because I've got this complicated. But this is a script written in 2009, published on the group policy website. This basically does a backup of all the group policy objects that were modified in the last month. So it's just going to go through, it's going to find all the group policy objects modified in the last month, output them to a folder. But the really good thing about this one, I just want to make sure it starts. Oh, yeah, it's searching for the group policy objects that have been modified. There we go. Found 33 that I modified in the last month. You can tell I've been doing lots of work for these demos. And look, new GPOs 2, new GPO 5. That was the one I just created. So there's new GPO 5. The other really nice thing about that script is it also in this folder puts in the monthly backups, a HTML export of the actual group policy settings. Now, I can't use this to import into a group policy object, but it's really nice. No, there's nothing in that one. Let's go this one. Display highly detailed. Here's the drive mappings that I copied it previously. So it actually shows you all the settings in a nice HTML report. So not only is it backing up, but it's actually giving you a report about all the settings that's in there. So you might not even have to restore the setting. You can just refer to the documentation that it automatically generates, the HTML files. So it's really important that you back up your group policy objects. I don't know how many times where someone has made a change to a group policy object and they thought, yeah, it'll be right. I didn't think it affected that much. And then it's just made so much. And then you go, well, okay, well, what was the old value? Oh, I forget. It's like, at least this way. You could script this to run once a month. You do your back baseline and then just run this. Or maybe you want to do a full and maybe run this every 4 weeks. Group policy objects nowadays without the ADM files actually stuck in the group policies are actually relatively small. So long as you have a disk with a reasonable amount of disk space, you know, keep an eye on the disk. This is not the panacea of backups of group policy by any means, but if you've got nothing, it's way better. All right, so keep an eye on disk space, but at least that only means you're backing up group policy objects then that have changed. And that URL and the slide decks are available for download. Well, that was the PowerShell to back them all up. And that's the link. Did you know you can download the slides? You don't have to take photos, but it's okay if you want to. 3, 2, 1. So it's channel9.msdn. It's the Channel 9 MSDN website. All these, the videos of all this will be able to download. And then you'll be able to download the slide decks from there, from all the sessions from TechEd. Or Ignite. That's on video now. Damn it. Okay. I said Ignite, didn't I? Okay, so actually the TechEd ones from many years ago are there still too. That's what I meant. Anyway, so how to do security filter group policy objects done right. But I said don't do security filtering unless you have to. Well, sometimes you do have to do security filtered group policy objects. Right, why is that important? Well, sometimes you do need to apply a setting, say, to just the finance department. All right, and the finance department's in every site everywhere and they all use the same workstation, but it's just the finance department. You probably had this. And sometime this year, you might have noticed it broke. All right, who noticed this is broken? Yes, do you know why? Yes, this patch on the screen here. Yes, MS16072, if I had a prize, I'd give you one. Now, of course, the answer was right there. Now, anyway. Oh, you didn't read, anyway. Okay, so you might notice that I have a link there from 2010. And if I open that link, I don't know if I got internet on this, but I'm going to try it, you know, living dangerously. Browser. Okay. Anyway, in 2010, I blogged about how to do this, and one of the things I said was how to do it the right way, and if you'd followed my advice, and I don't normally say I told you so, but geez, I told you so in 2010. Why weren't you following my website back then? Okay. Basically, it's not coming up. Oh, good, PowerPoint's crashed. Yay. Okay, switching over while that's doing its thing. So, what happened? Maybe you don't know what I'm talking about. Microsoft released a hotfix for group policy and pushed it out as a critical update. They found out that if you have removed the computer authentication, group policy objects, when they're security filtered, you normally go in to a group policy object and you edit the security filtering here. Can't see this? Yep. Okay. And how do you do that? Well, if I created a new group policy object, and you know, new GPO7. All right. And I wanted to do a similar thing with here. I go in here. I go remove. I want to remove authenticated users. Yeah, because I don't want this policy to apply to everyone. Come on, it's security filtered. And I want to apply it to the finance. Oh. Finance users, great. Delegation tab, what this has done here is it's removed authenticated users and all finance users. So here's one I've created earlier. And it's to apply a shortcut to this really awesome website called grouppolicy.biz to their desktop, because all finance people need grouppolicy.biz on their their desktop. And it's applied in this OU here, and under this OU here, Good Corp, we have the user John. So what does that look like for the user John? Oh, no, I don't want LTSB. Sorry about this. I started the wrong VM as I was hurrying. So the user John has this group policy setting. Now, pre this hotfix, that would not have been a problem. The problem is that Microsoft realized that the computer account object didn't have permissions to the group policy object. So you had to access the group policy object and all its settings from the sys file and the Active Directory as the context of the user. Well, apparently there was something bad about that, and it allowed a man-in-the-middle attack. So Microsoft said, okay, no worries. We'll just make sure that all the people, when they're evaluating the group policy object, you just have to do it as the context of the computer. If the context of the computer is talking to a group policy object and the authenticated users has been removed, the computer account doesn't have any permissions to read the group policy object anymore. All right, which means, say, for example, here, I am John. John. See, I am John. I'm in that OU. I don't have this shortcut. So I do a GP update just to prove that there's no rabbit up my hat, up my sleeve. I'm good at sayings. All right, and basically nothing's happening. So how do you fix this? So when you do security group delegation on group policy objects, you can still do this, but the way to fix it is one of two ways. And this is the way I recommend. Your mileage may vary. You need to add the authenticated users. All right, and you just need to give them read. So what does this do? Computer account objects are authenticated users. They're by default member of the authenticated users group. Kind of sounds strange, but that's true. The authenticated users group now has read permission on that group policy object. But because I added it through the delegation tab, if I go in, have a look at authenticated users, go down here, I does not have apply permission. Right? So my computer account object can now read the group policy object and figure out whether or not it needs to apply it to that user. And if I look at this group here, I don't want to click there, I want to click there, and click on that. Oh, I actually was just in there, wasn't I? And try Office 365. Oh. Dink, dink, dink. Got any, too many virtual machines. You might be right, actually. So I'm going to save. Sorry. Oh, I still have a few minutes. Oh, actually. What am I doing? All advanced. All finance. That's what I wanted to show. So the group policy object is still applied to the users because it has the apply permission, and the computer account can now read the group policy object because the authenticated users group is added. So now that I've done that, I've added authenticated users, because the computer account is already in the authenticated users group, in theory, the shortcut just appears. Yay, I fixed the problem. So what does this mean? It means from now on, whenever you do security group filtering of your group policy objects, you can't just go in here, go scope, security filtering, and just remove authenticated users. Well, you can, but after you do that, you have to add the group that you want to security filter it to. Then you need to go to the delegation tab and add authenticated users, or domain computers. Why would I want to use domain computers? Well, technically speaking, this group policy object might be, they might have sensitive information in it. If it's for financial users, you might be publishing where the check printer is that prints the payroll checks at the end of each month, right? Bad guys want information if they get in your network, and if they can authenticate as a user, they can then read that group policy object. And that's true of all the group policy objects, but maybe your security filter group policy objects are the objects you don't want the bad guys to look at all the time. So if you add domain computers, you just make it that little bit harder for them to be able to read the contents of the group policy object. The computer account object still has the permissions to read the group policy object, no problem, but you've limited it just to this context of the computer account. Now, if someone owns the computer and they've got malware on it and they're running a system, yes, they can still read the contents of that group policy, right? But it's a lot harder to get local admin access than it is just to authenticate as a standard user. The reason you wouldn't use domain computers if you're in a multi-domain environment and you're using cross-group policy linking. Who here has a multi-domain environment with cross-group policy linking? Couple of hands. Okay, this won't work. You have to use authenticated users in that in case because domain computers is local to that domain. You can't add domain computers from another domain to a group policy object. Right, that's where you do have to still continue to add authenticated users. So this is one of those things where there's a lot of conjecture around whether or not we should use authenticated users, domain computers. Authenticated users or domain computers group. A lot of people say, well, you should just use domain computers all the time because it, you know, obscures what's in your group policy object. I say your group policy objects have been open for the last 15 years, right? Yes, I see the point. You should hide things. Group policy objects might have something sensitive in there, in which case, yep, use domain computers. So, and just so you know, 2010, I said, don't do this, which is all what I was talking about. Sorry, the website did load. So it's really important you add authenticated users or you add domain computers to your group policy objects. Now, that is just high level. I have zoomed through a lot of those things, I admit. Some of them I touched really lightly, right? Some of them I went into a little bit more. Your mileage may vary. Everything I say may or may not apply to you. You need to think about that and how it applies to your organization. But these ideas, I hope, will just make the administration of group policy in your organization easier for you, right? And we all want it to be easier, don't we? We don't want it to be harder, all right? So really the summary is cut with the past, balance your design. It's not all about, you have to do it 100% this way and 0% that way. Balance the design. You saw those big circles, and you know, you had the 80%, and then you had the, you know, the 15% and the 5%, or whatever the numbers were. Balance the design to suit your organization, all right? Avoid the bad things. Sometimes you can't get away with it because of political problems, but avoid continuing and perpetuating the bad habits and just try to start the good habits going forward. Keeping it simple. Right, I left off a word there. But just keeping it simple. Because simple is easy, and so many times I want to do this, this, and this, and this, and it makes it so complicated, it's hard to support, things break, and then when things break, it's hard to fix. Just mentality of just IT in general, right? Make your design as simple as possible. And stay current. It's really important to stay current. Like stuff like that hot fix that just got released. It's like we only found out about it once the hot fix came out. And then it was kind of like, oh, yeah, all the forums started exploding because people didn't know about it. We'd blogged about it all the time, all the group policy MVPs, but then everyone still couldn't find it. So it's a good way to stay current. How are you going to stay current? Oh, there's this really good website, grouppolicy.biz. I've also got the Facebook group, facebook.com/grouppolicy. Which is basically, you know, all the content from the website I kind of publish into there. I sometimes publish lots of quick articles into there, you know, little notes and comments. All right. And of course, you know, SDM software, genesis of this idea, the group policy principles. These group policy principles, it's like security. It never stays the same. It's surely going to evolve over time. That's why you need to stay current. But if you just stay current and keep up to date and follow the news about group policy, hopefully that'll make your lives a whole lot easier administrating your group policy in your organisation. Thank you very much. Don't forget the eval forms. I hope you had a great session. Have a great Ignite.